So, as Dr. Orange said, we're a small group, so we'll have a lot of time to discuss after this presentation. But if at any time you have a question about anything, just feel free to just raise your hand and we can just stop right there and talk about it. I'm going to try to just simplify some of the things that we deal with when we're making the diagnosis, when we're working in the lab to try to understand how NEMO functions and what we've been able to piece together from this. So these are the three main areas. But what I wanted to start with was just to say that the first point is that we do a lot of phenotyping. That's a lot of the most important work that we do when we attempt to make a diagnosis. And what does phenotype mean? A phenotype is really a description of what the disease that the individual has is. So we know some things that the phenotype can be based on clinical features, meaning, you know, what infections has the person had, what developmental problems has the individual had, but also could be other things like what other things apart from infections have they had that we think are tied to NEMO. So we want to know all of that because we think that by knowing all of that, we'll eventually be able to treat someone that has all of that and potentially prevent some of the things from happening that we know can happen. So that's phenotyping. And phenotyping, you know, I mentioned clinical phenotyping. That's knowing about what medically has been happening. But there's also things called immunological phenotyping when we take cells from the individual and we look at the immune cells in particular in the lab. And then functional phenotyping is doing special lab-based studies to really understand how those cells work or aren't working right if there's a NEMO mutation. And then one thing that Dr. Orange referred to is genotype-phenotype correlations. And so what is a genotype? Oops. Let's see. Hopefully that won't happen too much. Let's see here. I think it's going into screen save mode. So the genotype is really what is the gene mutation that the individual has. So most of the time this is going to be in the NEMO gene, but sometimes we're finding that there can be a similar disease to what people get if they have a NEMO mutation, but it's in another gene. So the genotype is really basically just what is that genetic change that causes the disease. And then we'll talk about some therapy considerations, things that we're working towards, trying to understand things that are important right now in terms of how to deal with infections or how to try to prevent some of the infections and other things. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the tools that we're developing in my lab to understand this better. So I just wanted to mention that I work in a big group and in a big team, a big international team with collaborators. Jordan is one of them, but we have many others at NIH who are top-rate immunologists and investigators in immune disease. On the left, we have just different people in my lab group, and I'm in the autoimmunity branch, and as you heard, I'm a rheumatologist. So one of the things that I've been able to notice is a lot of the inflammatory disease phenotypes that appear in individuals with NEMO mutation, in addition to the very important infectious diseases that exist. So, but this happens in a big group effort. So about diagnosis. Again, the most important thing about being able to make a diagnosis is to know what's happened. A lot of times if we suspect there's something that's not right, it's because of an increased frequency of infections or very severe infections, unusual infections. But it's really important for us to get a very detailed history of everything that's happened. So we do that either over the phone or talking with the immunologist that has seen the patient already, or when they come to the NIH and see us, we just basically go over absolutely every single detail. And that also includes a physical exam. There are some things that we find that might not be something that somebody looks for if they're not familiar with NEMO syndrome or disease due to NEMO mutation. So that's one of the things that we really start with. And then what we do is we perform extended clinical testing. So there might be different affected organs or tissues, and what we really try to do is really leave no stone unturned. Just look everywhere where we think that there could be what's called pathology, or where there could be some negative effect due to the disease. And sometimes this involves reviewing biopsy materials that we've gotten, we've obtained, that have been done previously, even sometimes years before we see the patient. We can bring them to our pathologists and do special stains and studies to really help us understand what's going on. All right, so what do we get from the history gathering? Well, this is a table that appears in the manuscript that Dr. Orange mentioned, where we really compiled all the information about all the infections that individuals had. And this table isn't for you to get any specific detail, but just to see that each column here represents a different infectious organism group, and each row is a different individual patient. So we basically listed them all, and this is just to make the point that infection really is the most one of the probably the most important feature of this disease. So we're always very interested in trying to find out what infection there may be in the individual. So what we have to do sometimes is more extensive clinical lab work to try to find out what might be the source of an infection. Sometimes this involves doing what's called deep sequencing of samples, so that we're able to find organisms that are very difficult to culture. This is a culture plate on the top right. What we usually do when we obtain blood or a fluid is we put it on a plate and we allow the organism to grow, and then we're able to type it. But some organisms don't grow well, so we have to do special sequencing that lets us make that diagnosis. Sometimes we're also able to pick an organism from a plate and find out what it is by sequencing the proteins that are in that organism. These are all things that are only done in a few labs, around the world. But we're able to do that at the NIH. Now, just one thing to mention, NEMO, and I'm going to mention a little bit about this later, and some of you might know, NEMO is a protein that's found inside of cells, and it interacts with a lot of different other proteins for it to function normally. And shown here in red are all of the different proteins that we have found there to be mutations of that cause a disease similar to NEMO syndrome. So one I'm just going to mention, I-kappa-B, we saw a girl who came to us who had a disease that really was almost identical to the EDA ID, which is also what we tend to call NEMO syndrome for simplicity's sake. But she had severe pain in her back, in the lower part of her spine and in her back. And she'd had some infections with mycobacteria, which are like tuberculosis in that family of bacteria. But she wasn't thought to have an infection at the time. And she was put on strong immunosuppressive medicines for her back pain, thinking that she had arthritis. But we noticed that she had just, worsening pain, wasn't responding well to this immunosuppression. And even though it didn't really look like she had an infection in her joint, knowing that she had a mutation in a protein that interacts with NEMO, we suspected that. And we were able to sample some fluid from this joint and found that she did have an infection with mycobacteria. So one of the things that I just want to say that this made me realize is that individuals with a NEMO mutation or with a mutation that's related might not show infections in the way that a typical person would. So we always have a much heightened sense of the need to pursue that diagnosis if we can make a diagnosis. So in addition to lower back pain and arthritis as a phenotype that you can see, there can also be inflammatory eye disease in individuals with a NEMO mutation. So this is not showing up so well, but it's looking at the back of the eye of an individual that we see with the NEMO mutation. And he was very severely affected, but we wouldn't have known unless we had looked in the eye and done some special studies. And so we really just look everywhere. Other individuals have problems with the bones, so they can be very dense. This is showing you some images of an individual that had inflammatory lesions of the bone, so just painful nodules on the skin. And when we took x-rays, you can see some small sort of bumps on the surface of the bone. And another individual. And so what we do is we take some of these biopsy samples, and we see what does it look like. We do special stains, and we see that sometimes these lesions that we call them, these processes, the inflammation that's happening, looks very much like another disease that's already well described. And so by making some links between what happens with NEMO and what happens with other diseases, we can start to understand what pathways in a cell we might want to target to treat some of this. Here's another picture of an individual with a big bone lesion at the end of his arm, a very young individual. And, this will tie into some things I'm going to say a little bit later, but we're interested in trying to understand how specific parts of the body get affected with a NEMO mutation, not just the part that is important for fighting infection. All right. The other thing that that we can see is sometimes an inflammatory bowel disease, something that can be diagnosed as Crohn's disease is not uncommon, or also a very inflammatory skin disease that looks like psoriasis in some ways. When we can, we obtain samples and we're always thinking about how the mutation might cause this problem. But once we see a sort of a constellation of infectious problems, problems with some inflammatory disease, maybe some developmental problems, as you might know, not all individuals with a NEMO mutation will have this thing called ectodermal dysplasia, where there can be abnormal skin and hair and tooth development. We think there are many individuals that have a NEMO mutation that have maybe some problems with their teeth, maybe they don't have a full head of hair like a sibling does, but really they do not have what would be described as ectodermal dysplasia. So it comes becomes very important to be able to sequence the gene, the NEMO gene. And this is just showing you a gene in red and green. And the point that I want to make here is that if there's a gene, there's parts in between the parts of the gene that make the protein. And these parts that are in between get taken out of the gene when the protein is going to get made. So what we do, if we want to make a diagnosis, you might have heard of whole exome sequencing. Has anyone heard of that? Or okay, so some people might even have a family member that was diagnosed with a NEMO mutation that was found by whole exome sequencing. What we do when we have an individual come to us and we don't know whether it's NEMO or something else, is we look at these green parts, which are the exons, the part that actually has the code for the protein, and we look at all of them in the whole body and of every gene, not just the NEMO gene. And sometimes we're able to find some mutation in a gene that's related, even though everyone thinks, wow, this person looks like they'd have a NEMO mutation. We don't know what it is. Well, we might find that it's something else that's related. But you might see that these red parts that are in between, they get taken out. They get spliced out, is the term, before the protein gets made. And that can be important sometimes, and I'll mention that in a little bit. One thing to mention, Dr. Orange had mentioned that NEMO is complicated and it can be tricky. One thing that makes it tricky is this, that we have the NEMO gene on the left that's inside every cell in the body, but then we also have something called a pseudogene, which is just like the NEMO gene, almost the identically same sequence, except the pseudogene doesn't have that splicing happen, and it doesn't get made into the protein. But if we try to sequence the gene by whole exome sequencing, a lot of times, if this part of the gene is red, well, the computer's programs that we write can get confused because they don't know whether to put the sequence here or here. They don't know where to map it. So sometimes we have to use different approaches to try to find the gene mutation, and whole exome sequencing doesn't work, and genome sequencing doesn't work. And again, this is because more pictures of splicing out of Nemo, but basically you can see that here's, for instance, one what's called an exon that in some cases might get taken out of the gene before it gets turned into the protein, and in some cases it might stay. And sometimes when it gets taken out and it's not supposed to get taken out, we find that can cause severe disease. And so some of the methods that we use to find this is from some of that RNA from a patient that has a splicing problem. You can see that there's one band that's a little bit lower than the other. And this tells us that there was a splicing problem. And so what we can do is we can then look at the protein. And again, a couple of bands that we run in the lab on a gel. And you can see that from the patient, we have a band that's just not in the same place as the one from a healthy control. And so we know that the protein is a little bit smaller. It has a spliced out part. And it's only through doing some of these specialized lab tests that we're able to find that. Now, one thing that we can do is we can find that there's splicing in a patient and that they don't make the same sized transcript as one normally would. But we can't prove that the mutation that we found in the patient is the thing that's causing the splicing. Unless we do something like this, what we do is we take the gene that the individual has and we put it in a tube. And we then put the same one, but that also carries the mutation that the patient has, into a cell that doesn't have the mutation at all. And then we look and see if, now this is all, none of this, the only thing here that's similar to what the patient has is that one gene mutation. If we then take the product of that gene and we find that it's spliced, in a way this is really good proof that that one mutation caused that one splicing defect, we call it. And this goes back to some of the functional phenotyping that I talked about at the very beginning. So we're still under the category of phenotyping, but this is looking at really the function of one mutation on how the gene is produced. All right, so that's all part of the diagnosis. And we really can find a lot of mutations by sequencing, by whole exome sequencing, or even by other kinds of sequencing. But unless we do some functional tests, we don't really know that mutation is really what's causing the problem in that patient. And it can be bad to make the wrong assumption, because we might start trying to think about treatments or interventions in the wrong way if we're making associations that really aren't right. So what we have to do is then we have to go to the lab, do lab work to study things. One of the things that we do is we take cells from patients and we do tests on them. We might know that a patient has had a lot of problems with viral infection. But if we take the cells from a patient right when they're infected and compare them to cells from somebody else who's not infected, we don't really know when we're looking at those cells whether what we're seeing is due to the mutation that they have, due to the Nemo that's different, or whether it's due to an infection that's going on that might make the changes be what they are. So this is just showing you, we published a protocol in which we, to obtain cells from patients, skin cells that allow us to study. So if we, some of the patients that we see are very young, some of them have anemia, so their blood counts are low, and we try to limit drawing blood from patients, again, because there can be a lot of different factors going on that might confuse the interpretation of a study. But if we're able to take a skin biopsy, a shave skin biopsy from a patient, we're able to, something the size of a small mosquito bite that we numb the area and shave off, we're able to grow up enough cells that would really cover this floor that we're standing on and a couple of other adjacent rooms. So it's a lot of material to permit us to do studies. And then when they're cultured in the lab for weeks and months, really any infection that they that was around when they were seen or other drugs, medicines that the individual was taking are washed out. So we see that when there are differences between cells from a healthy control or the patient, we really are confident that those are due to the mutation that we're studying. Other things that we do is just showing when we draw blood from individuals, we try to study levels of cytokines that are in the blood that are produced by these immune cells. And this is just showing you that we compare individuals with different mutations in NEMO to a healthy control sample. And basically we can just sort of learn that here's the healthy control sample is the dashed line, the response that they have. So we'll stimulate the cells with a certain hormone that stimulates immune cells, and we'll see that they produce other different important signaling hormones called cytokines. And you can see that some individuals underproduce compared to the healthy control amounts of certain cytokines, but other individuals with different mutations overproduce. And both have serious disease, both have infection and inflammatory disease due to NEMO mutation, but they're very different. So one of the sort of take-home points that we get from this is that the NEMO amount, the NEMO function has to be not too little and not too much. It has to be just right in the middle, or else we can see problems. Now, other things that we do when we obtain blood samples or skin samples from individuals is we want to study not just the immune cells that we've taken or the skin cells, but other cells that might be affected. So some individuals might have, inflammation in the brain, or they might have inflammation in the intestinal wall or in the blood vessels. Well, what we can do is we can take cells and then we turn them into stem cells in the lab. And then what we can do, and this is a process that takes a couple of months to do, and then what we can do is we can turn these cells into different kinds of cells. So a stem cell can turn into a nerve cell, or it can turn into a liver cell, or a muscle cell. And so, in a sort of a personalized way, if one individual is having problems with a certain cell type or certain tissue, we can study that cell type or that tissue without, getting it by a biopsy from a patient, which sometimes can be very difficult, depending on what the organs affected. So one thing that we've been able to do in the lab is turn cells that are stem cells into something called monocytes and dendritic cells. And these are cells that we can get from a blood draw. But again, we try to limit that. We know individuals are very sick sometimes. And if we grow these stem cells into dendritic cells or monocytes, we can grow a lot of them. And then we can do special studies that aren't possible to do from just a peripheral blood sample. And so what do we compare the cells to? So if we take a cell from an individual, we get the stem cells, we could compare these cells to cells from a healthy control, but we know that that healthy control and that individual have very many different other genes that are not the same. They've had different environments that are not the same. They've been exposed to different infections that are not the same. So when we compare these, are we really sure that the differences that we see are due to the patient's mutation? Well, one thing that we're very interested in doing is, for a couple of different reasons, is taking the stem cells from a patient and fixing the gene mutation in that stem cell so that now we have two stem cell lines, one that has the mutation and one that doesn't have the mutation. But in every other way, these cell lines are identical. Every other gene and every other environmental exposure has been the same. So that's one thing that we're doing. And we're doing it with some fancy techniques. But one of the things that lets us do is to study the phenotype, what those cells are really like. The other thing that it lets us do is, you know, expand these cells and be able to test either new drugs or known drugs that are already FDA approved but haven't been used for Nemo syndrome. We can do this on a big scale. And we can also start to model how we might use these cells that are fixed, that have the mutation changed, how we might be able to use those in the patient themselves as a form of therapy. And this is all work that, you know, we're extremely excited about, but really it's just in its very beginning stages. So we're very hopeful that it's going to lead to important therapies, but we're not close to having them yet. The way we do this is by cutting the gene at the specific site where we know the mutation is, and being able to replace that gene mutation. And there's a lot of work going into this. There's different types of gene therapy that you might have heard of, ones where there might be fixes that might work, but they might be a little random. So this is a technique that should be one that allows us to really specifically target that specific gene and nothing else. Although, a lot of work still needs to be done to show that that'll be safe. Now, what can we do with gene-corrected cells? I mentioned, so these are just little tissue culture plates. And when you might think of cells growing in a tissue culture lab, you might think of a big flask or a big plate the size of a dish. Well, on the right, there's one that has 384 little different dishes all side by side. And we can put cells in them. And, you know, with the help of robotics, we're able to screen large numbers of drugs and in functional ways to see if, for instance, one particular drug might make the spliced out form of Nemo that a patient has be less. And so this is only possible by doing things, in a high throughput way. So the other thing that we have developed is mice that have the same mutation that a patient might have, so that we can study these in the lab. So there are just different conditions that we can try and see if they will work that are just not possible to do in a patient that comes to us. And this is work that's just starting, but it's based on an idea that we... really our whole lab work is based on, called forward genetics, where we see someone that has a phenotype, a strong clinical picture of disease, and we then get the genotype, we find out what the gene mutation is, and then we study that in detail, either in the cell lines or in mice that we make, that create to have the same mutation, so that we can know that what we're learning is directly relevant to the disease that a human being has. All right, so that's stuff in the lab. And then how do we put that together? We think basically combining what we know about the phenotypes, combining what we know about our lab studies, what can we put together? So this is Nemo. And Nemo is a protein in cells, and it binds to other proteins. And it's important in signaling, in sending a signal from an immune receptor that's on a cell surface, or maybe it's inside the cell, but it's an immune receptor that responds to either some of these immune system hormones, I call them, which are cytokines, otherwise known as, or these might be a receptor that's responding to the presence of a virus or a bacteria that sense these kinds of things. And Nemo is really important for sending the signal from the receptor to the nucleus, so that other genes can be read and made, and so the cell can respond. All right. So too much or too little of the signal being sent from the receptor down to the nucleus is a bad thing, we're finding. And we know this from patients. The classic thing that the typical way that a disease, an inflammatory disease, might happen in a patient, we think, is due to too little sending of the signal. Oops, let's see this. Go back to that. Is too little sending the signal. And if too little of the signal is sent because the Nemo's not working fully well, there's cell death. So what I'm showing you here, this is showing the inside of the intestine. And, you know, inside the intestine, there's lots of bacteria that we all have, but sometimes we need to sense them, know that they're there, and not mount an inflammatory response. Sometimes we need to respond to pathogens, what are called pathogens. These are microbes, bacteria that cause damage. Well, if we don't send the right signal, what can happen, and these are the little bacteria here, what can happen is you can have a cell that's lining the intestinal wall. It can die. And if it dies, that lets the bacteria through. And we have these white cells here are the immune system cells, and those can mount an inflammatory response. Now, the NEMO that the patient has is, again, in all cells. It's in the intestinal epithelial cells. It's also in the white blood cells. So sometimes, you know, we want to fix things, and so we have to think about what kind of mutation the individual has. Now, if we think about therapies that can be useful in many immunodeficiencies, we might think of a stem cell transplant. So infusing stem cells that then will allow a person's immune system to recover. And now, if we do that, we can replace these white blood cells that have a mutant NEMO with ones that have a normally functioning NEMO. But the problem is we're not able to repair or replace these cells in the colon epithelium. So sometimes, even though we might see that the infections lessen in frequency and severity after a stem cell transplant, sometimes the inflammatory disease can get worse. And so we have seen that. And so we're just really starting to understand some of the pieces of this. But really, we some of the work that Dr. Orange mentioned that's ongoing to really be an update of our previous work on understanding outcomes and phenotypes include thinking about how did people respond to a stem cell transplant, and does it depend on what type of NEMO mutation they had? Other types of mutations, and this is based on another mutation that we've been studying, lead to a specific defect in the antivirus response. And other individuals we think might have, and this is the NEMO protein here shown in pink, might have a specific defect not to the antivirus response, but to the response that we need to make to what's called atypical mycobacteria, mycobacteria that are in the soil and the environment that normally we don't have a problem with, but if we have a particular NEMO mutation, we might. So, based on studying different individuals with different mutations and knowing about what kind of functional tests we can do in the lab and what results we get, we can make some general conclusions that we have found that individuals that have the very end of the protein missing due to a mutation tend to have an overactive NEMO, and they can get inflammatory disease due to that. Individuals that have a mutation where they're missing part of the protein at the other end, either with just one small change or a change that takes out a bigger chunk, might have inflammatory disease, and we think that might be due to too low a functional level of NEMO, which we call a hypo-functioning NEMO. And so this is just an example of a mechanism that we've are in the process of describing about how the hyperfunctioning NEMO might work. That piece that's missing is important for interacting with, for recruiting a down regulator of the response. So when that doesn't happen, we have disease, and this is leading us to think about ways that we might treat individuals with this. And then lastly, just to point out that we're really constantly trying to figure out these correlations between a genotype and a phenotype. And we have just very little information, but we're constantly building upon it. Just shown on the right are results from two individuals that had a stem cell transplant that had a truncation, a chopping off of that end of the NEMO protein, and their colitis resolved, their inflammatory bowel disease resolved after the transplant. two individuals that had a mutation in this domain had a stem cell transplant, and it didn't resolve, and they didn't do better. Now, that doesn't mean that another individual with a mutation in this same domain won't do well, but we're starting to gather information and think about how these things might work, and I definitely, this is something that I'm just starting to think about, but there's other people that that really have a deep understanding of this that we're working with and talking to. So basically, if you have any questions about that, I'm happy to meet with any and all of you, individually after. I'm always available to talk on the phone, and we are, as Dr. Orange said, recruiting individuals and their families to the NIH so that we can, try to understand what's going on.